Hello everybody, welcome back. Today I'm joined by Tim Dirksens. He's the CEO of Venly, and we're going to talk all about Web3 and blockchain's tooling problem. Nope, I didn't say tools. We have a few tools in Web3, but more tooling, blockchain as a service, software as a service, and how to get blockchain and decentralized applications into the hands of more developers, more users worldwide. This feels like a crunchy and important problem, and it's something that Venly have been tackling since the start. Tim, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Thanks, Anthony. Thanks for having me. I'm doing very well. Happy to be here, actually.
Thank you for making time. I know you're a busy man. You've got a lot going on, a lot of things happening in the last couple of weeks and months. You're on the road a fair amount too, but for those people who don't know you, for those people who haven't heard of Tim Dirksens before, could you give us your Web3 or blockchain origin story? How did you find yourself in this space?
It feels like so long time ago, but it started back in 2014, actually. I was working as a business consultant for a company that actually distributes the revenue for music artists. And it was quite hard to figure out how that money came in and how that money went out. And when we were digitizing all of those contracts in 2014, Ethereum came out, smart contracts came out, and the use case was just 100% applicable for that. As in, how can we distribute all of those royalties in a very simple and easy way and in a transparent manner, and create smart contracts where you can say, okay, all the money that has to come in to fairly distribute that to all of those different people that are stakeholders within creating music, composers and everything, it really made sense. I didn't actually do anything with it at that time. The company wasn't really particularly interested in making it transparent. And about 2 years or 3 years later, I was having a conversation with one of my friends from uni, and they were experimenting with Ethereum for a finance use case. Then I was, of course, a little bit gutted because then I did see that I missed some boat over there. But I then convinced my co-founders to really dive in deeper. And already moved on from music license to the postal industry because as a consultant, you do multiple roles. And I also found use cases or applications for using blockchain technology for cross-border transparency around that. And we were then building applications and found out it was so hard to actually use blockchain that we were always stumbling upon a new problem. And it was just every other day that there was another problem that needed to be solved before an application would actually be useful with the technology. Hence, Venly was born to solve all of those infrastructure problems that application would encounter. And fast forward 5 years, we've been building that ever since.
Really interesting that you stumbled across some of the use cases that people are still struggling with today, still trying to pick through finance transformation, music royalties, and probably one of the intransigent, insurmountable problems, specifically around incumbents in industries not wanting transparency or not being prepared to transform, to create transparency. And hence, in some cases, we've just got to start from fresh as opposed to being able to try and change things because maybe the old ways of working or maybe the traditional models are just structured in a way that doesn't allow for decentralization. But that's a story for another day. Tim, thank you for the kind introduction. Now let's get into Venly. For those people who don't know, what's Venly about? What problems are you trying to solve? And tell us a little bit more about how things work.
We actually started as a wallet as a service provider because if you look at wallets as a whole, when we started, there was just MetaMask, right? There was nothing else that primarily existed. And it is reserved for the tech savvy. And at that time, it was all, if you don't own your keys, then nothing is safe. But in a business context, you do need some application to leverage an infrastructure where you can say it makes sense on how you're integrating this. And that actually led us down into the rabbit hole to say, okay, but we've now solved the problem for ourselves that we're facing while building applications. Maybe we now have to start focusing on an industry as well. after some research, we actually decided not to go into the financial industry because there it was already quite saturated, even though it's still very young. We figured out that gaming was a good landing spot for us because there weren't a lot of tooling available that was targeted towards gaming at the time. And historically speaking, gaming is always one of the first markets to adopt new technology at scale. So while we were building our startup to be at the mature stage to target fintech and more regulated markets at the later stage, we said from a technology point of view, let's focus on gaming so that we can get an infrastructure that is used at scale. And in the meantime, get our ISO 27001 certifications, our two certifications, so that over time we can support multiple industries while having a core technology that works.
And to start in gaming, that's an interesting one because I think if we look at the genesis of where Web3 dApps or Web3 interest came through industries, gaming came a little bit later, right? It started in finance or it started in wallets. Then we started seeing coin-based tokens and so on, Doge. And then eventually gaming was probably two or three steps later, even after the attempts at music, I think. Are you bullish on blockchain gaming? What has been your experience of seeing your technology deployed into the gaming sector?
To be honest, I'm not bullish on putting blockchain in front of everything. I'm bullish of putting blockchain in the back end and then using the technology that is inherently unsexy for the use case that you want to apply it against. So if you're talking about gaming and microtransactions, then yes, I'm excited about using blockchain technology for those capabilities. Are all chains already ready to scale? Some aren't. And that's where we see the market is not dead for gaming. It just takes a lot of time for game development to realize. And we need to figure out how can we adopt the technology where most of the game developers, they're already bogging down their heads on how to develop the gameplay. They don't need the additional complexity of, oh, geez, now I have to deal with this new technology that I don't know how to implement that. So that's the role where we play, as in we turn everything to the API layer. But then we take our APIs and put it into the game engines and the game and backend services for that vertical so that in the end, we take away all of those pains for them to concentrate on their game.
I can't remember how many times I've said it, but certainly a fair few that the blockchain is the unsexy infrastructure behind creating different or better experiences. And I think, thank you for correcting my overhype of blockchain gaming, or rather gaming with blockchain behind it, because you can look at some of the early propositions that have come out where you see a white label wallet and a game token or game NFTs, and it's a completely enclosed ecosystem. And so you're using NFT technology, you're using ledger technology, but it all still exists within a walled garden, for want of a better phrase, where in reality, you could just use a cloud for that. There's no requirement for on-chain. The ownership aspect of your assets or whatever's been created by the game is there to some extent if it's immutable on chain, but if it can only ever be used within the game that it's being created for and the game is creating its own white label marketplace and wallet, have we really decentralized anything? Have we really changed the game, for want of a better phrase, in that regard? I think possibly not. And I think the industry is slowly catching up to that.
True, but it's not just immutability. And I still believe in the walled garden. It could make sense for the use case because it's automated transactions. And it's also catching up on the royalties between those transactions. And if you're then setting up a game economy, even though it's a walled garden, where you allow peer-to-peer transactions to happen, with ledger technology, you can still review all of the history, you can review all of the transactions that happened, but you can also do automatically the royalty distribution. Of course, you can do that with cloud, but then the rules of the game can always change over time. Yeah, I would say you can make a choice between traditional cloud-based technology or blockchain technology in that case, but perhaps there's a benefit of having both worlds.
I suspect a lot of the narrative, and I don't like using the word narrative, but some of the values or the benefits that are stated around Web3 gaming start with immutability and ownership, right? You own your assets and it's on a blockchain and that means it's good. which I think is an oversimplification and actually in some cases inaccurate as benefits. What you've described there is actually there's a process efficiency or even a financial cost efficiency of micropayments via a cryptocurrency or another form of exchange, which can save you. If your game is big enough, if you're handling that amount of bank fees or cross-border payments or whatever, there's a significant benefit for you in that regard. And then also transparency in terms of saying whatever happens can happen automated, and also we can make it completely transparent to anybody involved how much payments went to which parties at which time.
Absolutely. And that's hitting the nail on its head, I think, with your description there.
And that's probably analogous to the story of your music royalties and the royalty agents or those who are allocating the royalties, not wanting too much transparency just in case they're able to game the system, which doesn't sound particularly fair. I think there's also an interesting movement in towards data protection with some of the ledger technology, which is where my work at Midnight starts to touch, which is maybe we don't want everything transparent all of the time, but we do want to trust the system can do the allocations fairly. So having everything on a public open blockchain like Ethereum all of the time, some of the metadata or even some of the data around certain gamers like to retain their anonymity. If somebody wins a $500,000 bounty for a particular game, I'm pretty sure they won't want the entire world to know which wallet address that payment went to. So we've still got some challenges from that perspective. So you can still see that we've got some work to do. But I'm interested in the space, have been for a while. And again, thank you for giving the examples there, because the entire point of the show is to help people realize to a level of understanding, why is this technology useful? Right? We're not all still working in this space because we think it's cool and we're here for immutability. There's a lot more to it. So while we're onto that, let's talk about the importance of software as a service or blockchain as a service. You talked about game developers having enough to deal with already with just focusing on building game economics and the standard software stack that they're used to building with before exploring into anything else. Help the audience understand the Venli stack, what sits in there. We talked about APIs, we talked about making it easier, but could you break it down a little bit so people can see the value or the importance of the SaaS and blockchain as a service side?
Well, indeed, we're actually now in a big overhaul to go from product thinking to platform thinking. That's because over time, we've delivered multiple products and brought them to market. But if we look at blockchain being a base layer and application development being our top layer, we're sitting as a middle layer solution where we focus on wallet technology, different flavors, as in you can have like our widget third-party wallet over there. There are some examples there that you know. We have the API-based solution where you can then integrate that into basically any application. It will, of course, be then a little bit more of a walled garden, as you say. Yeah. We are fast to also incorporate NFT APIs. Those APIs are to create NFTs. The value of that is, as a normal developer, you can create your smart contract through the APIs. The contract itself has already been fully audited. So those are a lot of cost-saving mechanisms that go into that software as a service. And then we also added the market and the marketplace APIs. So peer-to-peer, where blockchain is facilitating all of that. Those are the three core components of our platform operations. Then we look at, okay, what else do we need to simplify? As in, who are the fiat to crypto on-ramps over there? We partner with them so that can be used with our platform. Or we added Venli Pay as a solution because we saw a need to go from credit card to NFTs without cryptocurrency in between. Those are then additional capabilities to think end-to-end and then deliver that software and blockchain as a service component. Finally, go ahead.
So it's really trying to think about the user experience and the developer experience together, saying how can we make the use of blockchain technology, ledger tech, as simple and straightforward for the user? No, don't worry about crypto. Try and keep the wallet simple. Take credit card payments in the same way. Try to make it easy for the developer. So try to make these functionalities composable and consumed as an API, such that you don't have to write your own smart contracts. You don't have to hire a Solidity developer for $6 million a day or whatever the current rate is. And you don't really have to move away from what you would maybe call a traditional Web2 software development or IT operation structure, which could be agile, DevOps, cloud-based for most of it, but will include some API components or service-oriented components calling blockchain services.
Correct. another value proposition there is being blockchain agnostic. So basically, with our infrastructure, we treat every blockchain as an endpoint. And what is then the value? If you look at what happened to Terra Luna, if you develop directly on Terra Luna and then the chain itself collapses, all of that work, yeah, everything is gone, right? Versus with that infrastructure layer actually being abstracted on top of that, a lot of that is still safeguarded from a network event in that case. So you can probably redeploy it on a different chain at a faster pace instead of directly starting from scratch.
It's one of the interesting things. I actually met some of your team at Gamescom a couple of years ago, and this was the conversation I was having with them, is actually a number of apps will have multiple EVM chains as redundancy sat behind. So mm-hmm. you're actually minting twice or duplicating the work just in case one of the chains happens to go down. It's an interesting approach for risk management that a lot of people just assume apps or dApps are focused on one specific chain. But what you're offering in that point is saying we have a smart contract that can be moved from chain to chain, or maybe even transposed from EVM to something else if we've got a translation table. And you don't have to have complete reliance on one chain. You can have the Venli solution sit in the middle, which allows you to choose your chain, choose multiple chains, or choose all the chains.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is, from a business risk management perspective, Terra Lunas don't come along that often. And I'm not sure if anybody would expect Ethereum and Avalanche and Solana, maybe Solana, but Ethereum, Avalanche, and Polygon, to all go down simultaneously. But if you're in that business of saying, we want to be in this space, but we know it's early and there's risk, there's a problem solved already, which I thought was a really interesting one.
Yeah, couldn't agree more.
So on to some use cases, because I think it's important for us to illustrate. We've talked about a gaming example, but I know there's also Shopify is one of the applications or one of the integrations that you guys have done, which, again, I find particularly interesting to say. We've now got Shopify users able to compose decentralized applications and use NFTs, which is something interesting. Take us through some of your favorite, if you're allowed to have favorites, use cases or examples where different industries or different organizations are using Venli's capabilities.
It's quite difficult to have a favorite, if I'm completely honest, because the core of what we're doing is industry agnostic, right? And I'm very much concentrated on the platform approach. And with that, I'm always looking for platforms that are more in the Web2 space that have already their services for a specific vertical and as a solution for a specific niche. And how can we incorporate them with Web3? One thing, well, there are two integrations on the loyalty side that we're currently focusing on. One is Authic, as in that's a loyalty platform that's coming up and they're going to use our wallet technology. Another one is Seal Cloud. And this has a complete loyalty engine for the retail. And they've integrated our full stack from wallet API to NFT API to Venli Pay. And they're looking at their current Web2 consumer base, as in B2B, how they're going to engage them and bring them into Web3 by actually taking all of those solutions within their Web2 loyalty and engagement platform. What benefit does that give us? It means we don't need to understand all of the use cases of all of our customers within that specific vertical. We have then a platform that specializes for that niche that is carving that market out. And they are then moving that industry forward. And I'm then looking at more and more platforms within those verticals to then connect towards so that we can actually develop blockchain capabilities at a faster pace and with that specialization in mind.
That is so powerful. And for those people listening in who are blockchain builders or SaaS builders or anything like this, the architecture or the go-to-market approach that Tim has just described there is incredibly powerful, but I think the entire industry has missed it for the past 5-6 years, is SaaS on chain or chain on SaaS on SaaS, which is saying if you're a SaaS provider already serving an industry, you understand the workflows, you understand the problems, the pain points, you're already embedded in a whole bunch of places, right? SAP and Salesforce are very well known as leading software providers. You're not trying to take on Salesforce. You're not trying to replace SAP because they have a much broader remit or they have industry-specific solutions. But those components, those modules, those APIs, can be part of that marketplace or can be part of the software as a service solution that they're offering. So you've got a SaaS solution under a SaaS solution, and embedded under your SaaS solution in Venly, you have multiple blockchains. Right. And so if you're a blockchain person trying to force individual use cases in one industry just by going direct to the enterprise, you're probably missing a trick because you've got to have that expertise and then also force that particular enterprise user or industry user to build a custom application completely from scratch at the side of what they already do, and or then try and force fit that back into the existing software, which I think is a much harder path.
The path of doing that platform strategy is also one for the longer term, right? Because these are considerations that take a longer cycle to actually materialize and happen. Once we get a couple of them up and running, they then become good use cases for other platforms to take notice and learn from. Shopify is like the first example, but next to Shopify, you have 10 or 15 other e-commerce platforms out there that can do the same thing with us. So we are continuously pushing for that, but we are also very mindful of what can we do ourselves versus what can either the platform or an independent party that leverages a platform, like a service provider in between, an agency in between, can do that and develop that market. Because it's very hard to say we're going to own each of the different application supports, because it's super specialized per distribution partner.
Yeah, for sure. And there's obviously not an insignificant amount of time that is taken whenever they do an upgrade, that you have to do an update, etc. Managing those relationships is non-trivial. So there's an amount of work that goes with it. The upside is you immediately get 10 million customers because they're doing the marketing, I want to say for you, but with you to some extent.
Yeah.
There will always be guys who are rolling their own software applications that will be taking Venly capabilities as a white label. So there's there's that white label DAP capability where you've got the modules, like you said, wallet, payments, NFT marketplace, which if those are the things that you want in your DAP or that you want in your e-commerce experience or in your employee loyalty experience, whatever it is, you can plug those capabilities in. It'll look and feel like Venly, but you brand it yourself. And so you've got a direct relationship there. If you're a blockchain, right, if you're Avalanche, if you're Midnight, if you're Ethereum set over here, you've got another step to go. And I think those teams that have been trying to encourage individual dApps to be built just on the SDKs that blockchains have at this time, without that SaaS, without that middleware that is in an API-based, consumable, easy-to-use, service-oriented, solution-oriented, platform-based way, blockchains aren't there right now. They're not offering that type of capability. Some are moving that way, but I think that's the case for SaaS. That's the case for tooling for me.
Yeah, couldn't agree more.
And so there was also, we talked before the show started about Unreal Engine. So that's another example. I think Unreal has a sort of a blockchain marketplace, or has a place where developers can take in different capabilities. Is that, could you tell us a little bit more about how Venly and Unreal Engine work together?
Well, gaming has always been one of the verticals that we focus on first, right? Because our APIs are, of course, blockchain agnostic, but we have an amazing solutions architect for gaming that knows how to integrate our APIs and develop those SDKs. So he already did Unity, and that has been around for a couple of months now. But on Unreal Engine, that is now where we finally have been able to release the documentation that we can actually go to market on that, and that we can explore those capabilities with the leads that were requesting all of this on our end. And this is then some of the things where we're excited to then take away some of those pains. And if I talk to my co-founder, Karel, he also says there are actually more things that we have to look into and connect with, such as, how can we connect what we're doing on the e-commerce side, for example, a brand that has their digital assets that they're selling and their own token contracts, and bring them into a game and into that gameplay? How can we develop those B2B relationships? Technically speaking, with our different infrastructure routes that we've created between those different industries, we should be able to cross-pollinate on that. And on our end, we're learning from each other, still saying, oh, we didn't know that you were able to do that. And it was like, wasn't this clear when we developed all of this? So I thought, maybe yes for you, but yeah, we still learn a lot from each other on a daily basis on that front.
And so you already had somebody in your team who had an understanding of how game development worked. You had that kind of visceral in-depth knowledge of how games and how solutions are built in gaming. So you could easily see how to make that fit. Also, Unity and Unreal Engine are going towards that platform type of capability. So it naturally fits that if there's a marketplace for capabilities or marketplace for P2P payments with crypto or NFT-based solutions for gaming, that's something that they're going to want to plug in. So you're helping them grow their marketplace. They're helping you grow their addressable audience. And it's a partnership of not quite equals, but everybody wins. At least it's a win between the two parties. You know, it's costing both sides some development time, but ideally it's still with a good return on investment.
Absolutely.
I'm interested in how these partnerships come about. Obviously you've, and don't want any commercial secrets here at all, but you've got your list of maybe the addressable markets or industries or particular SaaS players that you want to go and speak to, that you want to see Venly's capabilities integrated into. How does that happen? Are these things that you meet at a conference, you say, hey, we should do this, we should do this? Or does it feel more like a more commercial RFP saying the next release of our technology 12 months from now needs to include blockchain? Vendors, please provide your documentation and we'll come back to you in 6 months. How do these things typically play out?
All of the above. For if you look at Polygon, we met Sandeep. I met Sandeep at NFT NYC. I think it was the first or the second edition in 2019. I think my colleague was already in discussion with Polygon. Back then, they were still called Matic while they were on testnet. And we were just the first tooling provider to be enabled on that platform. In fact, in the first year, I think we were almost one of the tools that facilitated a lot of that growth. If we then look at how Shopify came about, we were actually a backend service provider for one of the people that were doing NFT sales, and they were doing this as a service for artists and brands. But at a certain moment, they figured out, hey, we can just sell assets on Shopify, and we'll use Venly in the backend to do the minting and the distribution. And we'll just explain to them that the assets are on their way. It'll just take 2 days for it to happen. Shopify took notice of this because they sold a couple of million in revenue and then said, maybe we should invite Venly to actually create a verified application. And they co-sponsored the development for that. So sometimes it's an RFP process. Sometimes it's blind luck. Sometimes they've seen us do things for partners, and if you dive in deep, you sometimes figure out who the tech backbone is that's allowing that growth to happen.
Very cool. And so these deals are never simple, but it's nice to know that some of them do happen from kind of random meetings in places, and it's not always boring RFPs all of the time. But this is the world we're living in, and if Web3 wants to grow up, if Web3 wants to see itself under, in inverted commas, mass adoption, right? Wider use of the technology, it's going to be important to understand these processes, to understand how platforms integrate software and technology. You've gone through certification processes, right? So you've gone through ISO certifications, GDPR certifications, and so on, such that you can now meet the standards that other third-party software providers insist on, or their customers insist on. So then anybody that works with them must insist on. And again, this is something that maybe a chunk of the Web3 and protocols probably don't think about when they get to how do we enable easier working with existing software solutions.
It does take a lot of commitment to do that because there's no upfront commercial revenue coming out of that, because there's a lot of bodies to make that compliance happen, right? So it's quite a heavy burden that you put on your own company, but we have the luxury of being venture backed to look at the longer term cycle of this, and where we have to look at the maturity of businesses that will adopt technology. And in the long run, it's also going to be the more mature businesses where they say, I just need the legal checkpoints of all our infrastructure partners to be at that level so that they can be compliant with their own business.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's as fast as your chain is or as clever as your smart contracts are, if you don't meet the standards that organization is working towards, you're not going to get the work or you're not going to get the integrations. Mm-hmm. If you thought blockchain was already unsexy, just wait until the wave of compliance kicks in.
Yeah. But that's a benefit for us. The wave of compliance would actually help us out because then we've front-loaded all of that work and it will help us have a footprint in the market. So, yeah.
How do you choose which chains? This is always an interesting one for me. And sometimes it can be random, sometimes it can be strategic. When you look at, obviously you've got, I think, is it 15 chains integrated already, 12, 15 chains?
Yeah.
The next batch, the next five, the up-and-coming L1s, the layer twos, layer threes, layer 17s, the data protection chains, etc., the ones that add to your portfolio, the ones that come next. How do you decide which one makes the cut, or how do you prioritize your roadmap of integrations?
This changed over time multiple times. In the beginning, we said we need Bitcoin, we need Ethereum, we need Polygon or Matic. And it was actually VeChain next because we had customers on VeChain that wanted to use VeChain. So then it's going from other chains that were being highlighted as popular and just adding that. So then we added Eternity, and then we added Neo, and we added GoChain because at those times they were fairly popular. But Tron is another example. But then we noticed that wasn't a good strategy. It didn't help our business forward, just adding chains and hoping that the business would mature. There was only one chain where we were seeing adoption on that side, and that was Polygon. Why? Because that was actually the only one where we had a business relationship and a partnership agreement with. And that put our incentives aligned to say, we're going to do a co-creation. We're going to do a shared business development pipeline. And before Polygon actually became this mature, we were boots on the ground, having hundreds of Telegram conversations saying, okay, we have to build something together. And that level of commitment on both sides enabled a lot of growth to happen. That enabled us to shift to a mindset saying, okay, it's really important that we look at partnership agreements, for one. And at a certain point, we also added a commercial part of that, especially if it's a chain that was not even compatible, because there are certain chains, it's just such a big workload where you are surprised how much time that you would spend on integrating a new chain that just tweaked a couple of more things than you expected. And that can really sink your maintenance, that can sink your development capacity. And it's a big risk. So if you can then add some support saying, okay, there is a cost savings component of having our developers put time against it, because you always have to look at the opportunity cost of adding more chain versus adding more features on top of the platform that you can operate. And now our team has worked really hard to add an EVM component so that the amount of time that our team would need to spend to add an EVM chain would be quite straightforward. And then once that is in place, then we can just talk about partnership agreements, long-term commercial perspectives for getting a part of the market. And we're then looking at what is the focus of the chain, which industry are they going forward? Is that something that we also want to be in? And do we see that with our mutual strengths that we would have a good way forward? So it's hard to also do it that way because you're not exclusively focused on one chain, but you are relying on chain partnerships to have that mutual respect to say, together we can actually go and have a shared BD and we'll have mutual introductions happening on both fronts.
That's really interesting. And it's clearly more granular and deeper than just the standard exchange listing fees that you see around token issuances and stuff like that, saying pay X $100,000 and we'll list you on the platform. Maybe make sure there's a certain amount of liquidity and off you go. That's it. You're now on exchange X. In your case, it's actually much more granular than that. It's saying that we want actual people involved. We want there to be deliberate focus towards winning work, winning deals, which again, is a much more software business type of approach than the kind of the decentralized Web3, everything happens on Twitter type of approach. But I think that shows maturity, and that shows the reality of still in 2024, how a lot of volume, how a lot of software, how a lot of business is done. And you necessarily step away from that. It doesn't scale incredibly exponentially. There's some challenge to that.
Yeah. What's hard is if there's a lot of turnover on both sides of the table, right? Because it's still a relationship business. It's a very good example, again, is Polygon. We had an amazing relationship with the founders, but the founders, they have now moved into executive positions, and you have other people that are doing the main BD. We have to redevelop all of those relationships, and you're not talking about one, two, or three people anymore. You're talking to a BD army, and it's then a whole new conversation that you have to do. We were just talking about it earlier today, saying, on our end, a big improvement that we have to make is actually have a bi-yearly learning session with all of our network partners to tell them and educate them more of all of our new capabilities, because there's a lot of change happening on both sides of the table, and it is relevant to continuously to share that. So that's an improvement on our end to make so that we have the commitment for our partners that we have.
Very important. And again, it feels like traditional software as a service models, which is important for people listening to this to realize that if we want mass adoption, if we want wider use of the technology, we're going to deal with people problems, human problems, logistical problems, as much as we're going to deal with technical challenges or scaling challenges or TPS challenges or which language to write the smart contracts in. Scaling can happen through networks of nodes and DAOs and so on. And for the life of me, I've been struggling for the longest time to think about how do you scale a protocol without doing it one deal at a time, without doing it one relationship at a time, without doing it person to person at a time. And I think the reality is right now it doesn't. That's not how it works. There are many things that can scale, right? If you get into a certain SaaS platform underneath and that platform has its 10 million customers, then you get network effects, right? You get scale benefit there, and that's something that can accelerate your path. But for the layer one, the important is to get underneath your platform to then help you get underneath others' platforms. And so actually, it's a mutual benefit story. But again, it scales one deal at a time. I don't know if you've seen any hacks or accelerators to help us to do more exponential growth when it comes to SaaS or Web3 technology. Maybe if you did know, you wouldn't want to share it with me in case your competitors are listening. But in terms of where we go next, do you see that we can do better as an industry, or that you, to all the layer ones out there who are interested in Venly or who are interested in SaaS, what can layer ones do better to make it easier to scale better and faster?
For Venly or for themselves? Or
yes.
There are a couple of things that really help. We're looking at shared BD, right? So those conversations, and that happens on two fronts. We have customers that ask us, can you adopt a new chain? We can say, yes, we can do that, but what is the benefit to do? Because we need a partnership with that chain, but chains are not going to say, oh, here's another tooling provider, here's another company that's going to go after a grant application or anything. And we're saying, no, that's not the goal of the conversation. The goal of the conversation is to have mutual alignment and a long-term partnership. So look at it as a 3 to 5 year business plan that you have to work out together, because if we're going to spend time integrating your chain, that means that's time that we have to educate all of our business resources to provide that back to your businesses and the market. For those one or two or three clients that are requesting it, that's not enough. So per chain, we need to have at least 100 clients that want that. So it's looking at who are our customers requesting a chain, but also the chain saying, okay, we've identified that there's so many customers that you want to go after. You apparently have solutions XYZ. Maybe if we combine those conversations together, immediately we both have 5 or 10 or 20 deals more. And it's going top down and bottom up at the same time.
And when you talk about customers, that number of 100, I think, is a really interesting one, because a lot of chains, you'll see they have an announcement of maybe one major thing per quarter. Maybe two, maybe three, saying, you know, we're doing a partnership with Bank X, life sciences company Y, gaming company Z, whoever it is. These are one at a time things, but you're saying 100 customers. What does a customer represent to you?
We're traditional SaaS, right? So our models are entry level. We're at a couple of hundred dollars per month. It's really saying, okay, all of the small and medium-sized businesses that want to start to explore with blockchain technology, you can actually onboard on our self-service platform. You can experiment with everything, and for almost no money, you can integrate that. And if you're looking at blockchain and Web3, a lot of it is still in the innovation cycle and the pilot cycle and the experimentation cycle. If a customer would be saying, like you mentioned, a Bank X or a Fortnite or a Blizzard that says, I am now strategically moving on this, and from today and tomorrow, I'm going to ignite 100 million users. Of course, that one announcement is more than enough to get that, right? It's a multi-billion dollar business. The reality is, most of those announcements are marketing announcements for a pilot where you're developing a use case that will probably not be the key towards adoption. It will help because it will be there in 5 years' time. But yeah, we're looking then at the number 100, as in, yeah, if you're looking at MRR prices of 100 to 1,000 of small, medium-sized companies, you need a 100 to actually have some of the FTEs being compensated by those number of customers. Of course, We are looking at enterprises with everything that we're doing, but yeah, for chain adoption, a lot happens of SaaS and self-service.
And I guess those 100 customers could come from the existing community, people who've been building on testnets, people who've been interested to put something from that chain into production, but maybe the chain itself doesn't have the SDKs or the SaaS environments to make it easier or to do integrations, which you guys have already provided the shortcut there. So when you think about it, actually, for a chain, it's saying we're basically saving time, money, and effort in integrating with Venly, because Venly have already an existing pattern, an existing model that allows builders in your network to build more easily. So you're saving yourself in building your own tooling by outsourcing that or by partnering with Venly to be able to do that. So
yeah, I think you're saving two things, right? Since we're looking at being a SaaS business servicing more SaaS businesses, we're already a distribution platform, but then on top of us is another distribution platform that we're integrating. So integrating with Venly immediately gets you into a Unity Unreal. Integrating with Venly could get you into Shopify. It can get you into the loyalty platform just by doing that integration on that end. So it opens up that plethora of verticalized solutions that we're partnering with on top of our infrastructure.
Got it. Exactly. And that, and in exchange for that, right, there's a cost to you saying we're going to allow you access or enable you to get access into this side of the market, but we need to see some revenue through the door. So if it's 100 customers at $100 a month, it's, you still want to bring a book of $1 million worth of business with you. But if you're a legitimate chain, if you've got a legitimate community and you've got a market cap of $1 billion, that $1 million worth of business should be conceivable. It's not an overly arduous ask. It's just when you come to the table, don't just come with your grant money, come with something that looks like a business that, again, can help scale and grow.
Yeah, that's coming back to your question as in how do you deal with blockchain partners. The last thing that I've actually done is turn the tables. I'm not asking for a grant. I'm not asking for anything. I'm asking for, tell me what your chain network foundation looks like and look at Venly as a tech and a service provider and see what you find as a feasible proposal, keeping in mind that we want to be your partners for 3 to 5 years. So that's how I now approach blockchain networks to say, let's have the discussion of how we're going to do business together.
Based on sound principles, based on strategic principles, not just based on what's the hypest chain at a particular point in time, not based on market cap or transaction volumes that we all know can be in some way manipulated. It's actually saying we want to have partnership. We want to have genuine collaboration, which I think in this space is refreshing, or at least maybe some of the other chains, projects, or providers have a less long-term focus. And I think, as you described, that's good business, because the route into working with large enterprises, banks, whoever it might be, if you're here for 10 minutes of software, you don't stand a chance, right? Enterprises don't buy software from companies that have been around for 10 minutes and that may not be here in a year's time. They want to see longevity. Yeah. They want to reduce or minimize risk. The cost of retooling for an enterprise. I spent some parts of my years going through core banking transformations as a management consultant, and the amount of money that was spent on those particular activities was astronomical. And okay, that's the biggest retooling you can ever do. But the cost of a finance transformation or the cost of an ERP transformation, other micro parts of the business, still in the multiple, if not hundreds of millions of dollars, depending on the size of the organization. And so your NFT royalty platform as a service, if you've been around for 10 minutes and you don't have a particularly good partnership structure, don't have very good APIs, don't have your ISO certifications, and can't speak business, you've probably not got much of a hope in isolation. Partner with Venly, you've got maybe a greater shot, but at the same time, you've got to convince Tim of all of the same things. So it's the same conversation, just maybe one layer extracted from the client or the end client.
Yeah, we're with four co-founders. Eh? So in that case, you have to convince a whole body to make it happen. But all in all, we can find a way to partner up.
There we go. I'm not calling it the Venly Dragon's Den, but the point is, and again, for those listening in, the takeaway from this is come prepared to talk business. Don't talk about hype. Don't talk about your transactions. Don't talk about how great your chain is. Talk about how we actually get meaningful adoption. I think that's a lesson that everybody could do with taking away, saying the next conversation you have around partnerships, how are you bringing commercial value, or how are you planning to work with the other party? And how well do you understand their business? I think that might be, I don't know whether you've experienced that of people coming in and just assuming you work the same way as an exchange does.
Yeah, no, completely different compared to how they would work, I assume. My co-founders really don't like it when I use the analogy. They always say, Tim, it's wrong. It doesn't really work. But I just can't shake the feeling that it is still correct. I look at Stripe, I look at what they do for payments infrastructure and making the complex easy, as in they're not a bank, they're not providing any of those infrastructure services that the bank does, but they provide the digitalization and the ease of use to bring payments into the new world economy, and they just simplified it for everyone. And of course, yeah, you have all the Stripes of the world, all of these service providers that make it happen, but they are the best in breed to do that. And with Venly, we're not particularly different. We're a software as a service provider, but if you then replace payments infrastructure, banking infrastructure with blockchain infrastructure, it's, for me, still a good analogy. We're just taking away all of the complexities of blockchain and creating that simplicity so that you can use that in real world applications in a digital context.
I don't mind the analogy. I can see why your co-founders may have some issues with it being a narrow analogy compared to the breadth of what you provide as a service. But I think it's helpful just to help people understand that if you can remove complexity, target a developer audience that just wants to build a business and not relearn a whole bunch of new technology, there's value in that, because the more addressable your technology is, and if you believe the benefits are there, and if others see that, you've got a business. And that's a good place to play. With a couple of minutes left, I want to ask a final question around something for the builders, something for people out there who are listening, who may be thinking, actually, maybe Venly could be an accelerator for me, or something along those lines. What would be your advice to those customers or organizations who are looking to build with blockchain capabilities, right? We talked about it before. We're saying we're not building blockchain games, but we're building games with some unsexy blockchain infrastructure underneath it. Mm-hmm. What would be your advice to those people thinking, maybe blockchain, NFTs, ledger tech is for me, but I'm still not sure?
Think about the business use case. And if you see that the technology is applicable, then come to us and we'll help you out further. It's actually as simple as that. Not one to say build on blockchain because the market is there, the hype is there. I would actually argue it's very dangerous to build on a bull over or a bear cycle. Learnings from myself, I would actually argue a volatile market as blockchain technology comes with significant challenges, right? Because when it goes well, you get so much demand, you have to steer your company for that accelerated growth. But on the flip side, it can really turn back around against you, and then you have to pull out all of the brakes. And then 6 months later, it's back into full acceleration mode. And then, yeah, you're not building a sustainable business because you're always taking on the next market, taking on, reacting to the market. So I would say, try not to look at the market and try to look at the long-term perspective. And if you're building an application using blockchain technology, develop your architecture without it first, see if your business case stands, and then take on blockchain technology.
We have a very special guest to end the show. Tim, who's joined us?
Indeed. We have Ellie has joined us. She is my firstborn.
Thank you, Ellie, for joining us. Very good of you to join the final end of the show. Tim, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom, your advice with us. We'll close it there. Have a brilliant rest of your day. Stay safe out there and go play with the little one.
All right. Thank you, Anthony, and thanks for your time. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, Emil. Stay safe out there. Thanks again for listening to the Blockchain Won't Save the World podcast. As always, opinions in this episode are mine and those of my guests alone. If you want to find out more, please feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. Check out some of the other episodes on the Blockchain Won't Save the World podcast, and check out the YouTube channel, also called Blockchain Won't Save the World. Stay safe out there.